Longer term, as we move forward, the predictive aspect of at which point in a case, what is going to be valuable for you to know, what insights at the particular moment are going to help you make better decisions. And so I see longer term as we move forward, it being less of a, I'm coming with the questions that I need, and instead Trello sort of surfacing to you, these are the questions, these are the answers you should start to think about based on where you are in your case.
Today on Law Next, Nicole Clark, founder and CEO of Trellis, an AI-powered state court research and analytics platform. Clark was a litigator who began collecting data on judges for her own use. Seeing the strategic advantage that data gave her, she launched Trellis in 2018 to make the data available to other lawyers. Recently, the company raised $14.1 million that it will use to expand its coverage into additional states. This is Bob Ambrogi, and you are listening to Law Next, the podcast that features the innovators and entrepreneurs who are driving what's next in law. Before we get to Nicole Clark, let me take a moment to tell you about the advertisers who so generously support Law Next. Paradigm believes that when perspectives shift, possibilities unfold. Paradigm offers four leading legal software solutions that help you manage, automate, and grow your firm. The practice management platforms Practice Panther, Bill for Time, and Meriscase, and the online payment solution Headnote. Learn why more than 40,000 lawyers trust its products to shift the paradigm of how they practice law. Learn more at joinparadigm.com. Now on to today's interview. Nicole Clark, welcome to Law Next.
Thank you so much, Bob. Great to be here.
Nice to speak to you again. It's been a few years since we've spoken, but you've had a lot happen, I think, since the last time we talked. And hopefully we can go over most of that over the next half hour or so as we talk about the company and your most recent news, of course, which is a major fundraise. But before we get to that, let's start by asking you to just tell us about Trellis and what you do.
Absolutely. So Trellis is really a research and analytics platform for the state trial court system. I like to think of it a little bit like the way you might think of Pacer laying on top of federal court data, or sort of a Google for the state trial court system. That's really what we do, except rather than Pacer being on federal data, we do that onto the state trial court data, which is otherwise, as I'm sure you and your users know, fragmented across thousands of individual county courts, data that has historically been very, very difficult to access. So we make the data searchable, and then we power and offer analytics on top of the data as well.
Yeah, it's been such a problem. And I mean, I'm in Massachusetts where even still, you know, Massachusetts is considered to be a technologically advanced state,
yes,
not quite the same as California, but certainly advanced. And even still in Massachusetts, it's just really hard to get access, especially for members of the public, to get access to court data of any kind. But
that is very true. Good news is we actually just released Massachusetts recently as well. So hoping to make it a little bit easier for your folks.
Yep. I did not know that. That's great news. I'm glad to hear that. What was it that inspired you to start this company in the first place?
So I was a litigator previously, and I did primarily labor and employment work, a lot of wage and hour class action work. And I was at a variety of firms, and I was just always shocked that we were really sourcing anecdotes internally to make strategic decisions about cases. And it always kind of surprised me that here we are in an industry with so much data, such great resources, and unlike really every other industry, not effectively adequately utilizing data to make informed decisions.
Right. And by sourcing anecdotes, you mean basically you're all kind of calling or emailing each other saying, anybody know anything about this judge? Is that what it comes down to?
Exactly. We're assigned to this judge. Has anyone have any intel? Have they been before them before? And then from there, you make decisions, which is really not as ideal as it can be.
And so how did you come up with the idea of finding a way to respond to that?
Well, so from there, the real impetus story, so the sort of the idea that we weren't effectively utilizing data sort of, you know, rolled around in my head for a number of years. And it was one night I was writing an MSJ, motion for summary judgment. It's a really big motion in a case. And I was complaining to a colleague of mine that I just wasn't sure how to structure the motion. I couldn't figure out how to organize it. And I didn't know the judge. And really, I was just complaining. And my colleague said that he thought he had appeared before the same judge a few years earlier. And so we went in, we checked internal in the file. And in the document management system, there was a PDF that was a ruling by my judge on my issue, on my motion. And for me, that was really the light bulb of data exists, data for exactly what we need. Folks working in the trial court system where every case starts, there's data there and we need to be utilizing it. How was it possible that I, as a litigator, didn't have access to see my own judge's ruling on a similar matter from the very start of the case? And so that was really the turning point where I recognized that there was just a huge gap in the data that was available. From there, I had, you know, engineer friends, and I really think of them more as magicians. And I said, look, there is this entire court system that isn't being aggregated, that is really valuable data. And what we did was we started utilizing really, really sort of mining data in the courts that I was appearing in most often. And at that point, Southern California primarily. Mm-hmm. And I used the data really as my own secret weapon for a number of years. It took me a number of years to really get the courage up to jump from practice. Yeah. But in that time, I was really successful in my motion practice. And ultimately, that is what allowed me to really say, this is data that we need to bring to other litigators so we can all really gain some insights and make informed decisions and not operate blind in the largest court system in the world.
Yeah. How was that a secret weapon? What kind of advantage did it give you to have access to that kind of a data?
The way I used it primarily was for motion drafting. So what I would do is I would look up a ruling by my judge on a particular issue when I was drafting a motion. And I would honestly use the judge's own structure, own organization. And so what it would tell me was, what's the case law that the judge prefers? How should I structure the motion? And then from there, I could weave my facts in, but I could do it with a really strong outline. And so sort of be hours ahead of where I would be if I was just, you know, starting from scratch or from somebody else's, outline of a motion. And so for me, it was the motion practice. It was utilizing a ruling and making that into a skeleton of a motion. And not even if it has to be the same before the same judge. I would find, of course, it is gold if you find a ruling by your judge on your issue. But what I found is, even if you find really well-organized rulings or well-organized motions that have been successful, you are going to be in a really strong place to start to think about how to best develop your case.
Yeah. I know that I interviewed you back in 2019, I think it was, and you talked about
it. We were just a baby. Yep.
Yeah, you talked about it then as a decision engine for attorneys. Do you still think of it that way?
I think it's more – so an engine, I guess, has multiple components, and we think of it as many components all operating at the same time. So it's not simply your judge. It's not simply opposing counsel or your venue, but it's really sort of all of those components playing together and how you can think about the sort of holistic case and strategy.
So, I mean, as you say, part of the challenge for lawyers before you started this company was that this data was not easily available. So as you decided to start this company and build this product, how did you address that challenge of getting access to this data?
You know, it's still a challenge. I tend to think of the hurdles of accessing data at the state trial court level. It is, a burden and a benefit. It's a burden because it is extremely difficult. It's a benefit because it's why we have a business, because it's so difficult. So the way we do it is on a county-by-county basis. Every county has their data entirely, you know, separately hosted. This is, you know, separately just in on tons of different formats. Right. And so we have to go in county
data,
by
different
county.
Systems, different formats.
Yes.
It's a mess.
Unstructured is like a euphemism for the way that this data is maintained. And then we go back, and what we do is we map to our own Trellis classifications. So yes, you know, hundreds of different courts could say a personal injury case is defined in all of these different ways, but we'll map it back to you. We know that means personal injury and maybe a particular cause of action for Trellis. And then we create the structure and then have to map the data back into our own structure.
So how do you do that mapping? Is that a manual process, or are you using technology to do that in some way?
So it's a combination, generally, and even with AI and all of the feats that we have, you're still going to need humans, especially with the nuance of the law and all of the different ways that things get said. So when we first started, there was no training data for creating an ML, algorithm to be able to classify this data. So it wasn't even possible to have the data to train yet. So what we did early on in the company is really manually classify just loads of different cases. In fact, we actually classified down not only to sort of a docket level, meaning, you know, judge, county, parties, et cetera, but we classify on a docket entry by docket entry level. And that's because judges sub in to hear different cases, despite, a different judge may be presiding. And we, in doing judge analytics, have to account for all of those potential variations and make sure that we're mapping an outcome of a motion to the right judge. So massive effort in terms of classification, logic data mapping to start with. We're now at a place, just really finally starting to get to a place where we have sufficient data to continue to work on algorithms to be able to classify the data. But even then, it still takes humans, and in this case, somewhat sophisticated humans. We need lawyers in some cases to be reviewing some of the final output and to say, okay, we're at this accuracy level. How do we continue to get better and better and better?
So it's a sophisticated, somewhat manual process. How scalable is that? How easy is it for you to expand into other states and other courts?
Well, the good news is, because we did all that the huge heavy lift early, we now finally have the data where now what we do is we can run against that logic system. We can map back into our own structured data. And now we simply watch accuracy. So we're having humans QA rather than do the initial sort of classification as we did really early on. So not scalable if you're starting, but you have to start from somewhere.
Right.
And there just wasn't the data structure set to be able to train algorithms on at that point.
Yeah. And you started from somewhere. You started in California. Was it always your vision to take this beyond California, or did you initially see this as a state-specific product?
You know, I always saw it as a nationwide. Certainly the sort of the way Lexis and Westlaw have Court of Appeals and up, that Trellis would really serve the trial court space. Now, that being said, even building a business from scratch in one state alone, especially with almost 60 different counties in California alone, is a big undertaking. So we definitely started with California, made sure that we had really robust coverage there before we started expanding. And now I like to think of it as sort of breadth and depth at the same time. So we're continuing to go on, bring new jurisdictions in new states, but always continuing to go back and get a deeper level for all of the states we're currently in as well.
Yeah. I read an interview you did a few years ago with Mary Jutton, where you said, quote, building a company is extremely tough and the journey can be particularly isolating. So what was it like? What were the toughest obstacles you faced in starting? You know, especially since you had never actually started a company before, you were a practicing lawyer. How hard was it for you to get this going, and how did you, make it through those early days?
You know, I think that it's interesting because I look back and some of it I don't even know how we got here.
Right.
But there's different massive sort of, potentially fatal obstacles at every level of a business. So the really early days, that's simply proving to people that the idea itself is valuable, that someone will be interested, that someone would pay for what you're saying you think is important. But no, there's no question that the entire journey is difficult is a good way to put it. We're experiencing different problems now, but there's always different obstacles in your path as you're building a company.
Yeah, and I know that before you formally launched, you went through the Techstars LA Accelerator program. Was that helpful to you?
You know, it was. I think that whether a startup in particular, a tech startup, should join an accelerator, I think is going to be really, really specific to exactly what they need at that point. Now, I came from law. I didn't know anyone in the tech community. I knew a single developer at that point. And so finding folks both that understood sort of the tech startup ecosystem, and then also that had built and scaled businesses before, that was massively valuable to me at that point. I think depending on the company, if you have experience, it may not be as useful, but that part was useful. I think I probably went into Techstars thinking, oh, if you go into, a renowned accelerator, you're going to come out funded. Mm-hmm. Right. And you start your journey. And that's not the case. You definitely are still, as the founder, responsible for getting folks on board. And if anything, sort of an accelerator is a plus to investors, but it's certainly not by any means the reason that they will invest in you.
Right. You were able to raise some seed funding by the time you launched. I think it was $2 million to start.
Yes.
And more since then, including the latest news announced just a month and a half before we're speaking here, of a $14.1 million Series A round. So what does this latest round of funding mean for you?
Well, the way I look at it, and it's sort of the business in general, is instead of thinking about what do we need to tackle to IPO, we sort of look at it in milestone based. So what do we need to tackle to get to the next stage of our business? What's the growth? What are the milestones? What are the revenue? So what this means for us is that we hit milestones to be able to demonstrate to investors that this is a real product. There is a fit here, and that we can scale. And so now, what this funding is how can we scale faster? We could crawl our way through and grow the business, but if we can acquire our data faster, if we can provide more analytics, build into new markets faster. So really, this funding is I think of it on two levels. You're going to really sort of double the engineering and data science team, and then also start to grow sales in a meaningful way that we have just gotten started and are just starting now.
Yeah. And who are some of the investors? Tell us about some of those who are participated in this round.
So we're really, really lucky to have some support from some incredible folks. So Kraft is one of our investors. The managing partner there is David Sachs. He was the COO of PayPal and many other companies, Yammer, et cetera. The special thing about that is that he was the CEO or led or invested in many sort of bottoms up sales companies where it really think of Slack or Dropbox, the ones where it wasn't heavy direct sales, but instead individuals come in and bring the product into an organization and it grows in a sort of viral sense from there. And that really was the approach and has been the approach that we've taken. And so couldn't be more lucky to have someone who has seen that motion, seen it work, and be able to help guide us. Some of our other investors include Sky Dayton, who is the founder of Earthlink, many successful businesses there as well. Mm-hmm. We have Okapi, which is a Southern California fund that's been along the journey for the entire time. And recently, we just brought on Calibrate, that is a heavy AI tech focused fund to help us continue to mature there.
As a litigator in Los Angeles, Nicole Clark saw that state court data could be a secret weapon, but that access to that data was difficult. So she started Trellis in 2018 so that other litigators would not have to operate blind. But even as her company has grown, Clark believes the field of court analytics is still in its infancy. When we return, I'll ask her what she sees ahead for Trellis as a company and for court analytics more broadly. But first, let's hear from the sponsors who support Law Next. Bill for Time brings modern technology to the legal billing process. Automate your time tracking, process online payments, and create custom invoice templates, all in one place. Learn how Bill for Time can give you time back in your day and save you money today at billfortime.com. That's Bill, the number four, time.com. Welcome back to Law Next. My guest, Nicole Clark, is a former litigator who founded Trellis in 2018 to provide litigators with easier access to court data and analytics. With the company's recent raise of $14.1 million, what does the future look like for Clark's company and for the field of court analytics more broadly? As you'll hear, Clark realizes that there are lawyers who remain skeptical of court analytics. But she believes that the use of analytics will become the industry standard, commonplace among litigators and expected by clients. Let's get back to our conversation. Another quote of yours that I'd read, actually a story in VentureBeat about this this latest investment round, quoted you as saying that, quote, "the types of analytics and variations on insights is still in its infancy in terms of what is possible and what Trellis plans to accomplish as it continues to grow." So where is this field of analytics, especially litigation docket analytics now, and where do you think it can get to?
So I do believe that. I believe what we're doing now, of course, hasn't been done before and is incredible and is really pushing the limit, but it is very much still early in terms of what this technology is going to be able to do as it matures, as we have greater data sets. So right now, think of sort of judge analytics, right? That's an easy to understand value prop. You try and understand the judge that you're appearing before. But how do you zoom out from there and say, I want at my fingertips without all the manual research? Because right now, this would require some manual research on our site. You'd have to look up your opposing counsel and then think about your opposing counsel and your judge and pull up that data. And it's the user that is really doing the research, but the data is at their fingertips. Longer term, as we move forward, the predictive aspect of what is it, at which point in a case, what is going to be valuable for you to know? What insights at the particular moment are going to help you make better decisions? And so I see longer term as we move forward, it being less of a, I'm coming with the questions that I need, and instead Trellis sort of surfacing to you, these are the questions, these are the answers you should start to think about based on where you are in your case.
Does as the use of analytics becomes more widespread by lawyers, does the competitive edge diminish? if we all have access to the same analytics, yes. Are we all on a level playing field at that point?
So I think the answer is yes. And I think that's the way it should be. I think that the law has not benefited from there being, not unilateral resources on both sides, where yeah. Particularly large defense firms, even just their internal database is monstrous compared to what small solo practitioners have at their fingertips. And so, yes, early on, accessing analytics and having access to this information, a competitive advantage. And I think we're still there. I don't think we've reached the tipping point yet, but I think we're getting a lot closer now where it becomes table stakes that, of course, you need to understand your judge. Of course, you need to see how many other cases your opposing counsel has and whether they take cases to trial, right? There are some basic pieces of information that need to be taken into consideration, that need to be discussed with a client from the start. And so I see it moving from competitive advantage to industry standard, that this is that your client has an expectation that you would be making decisions based off of this data from the very start.
Yeah. When you first transitioned from practicing lawyer to startup CEO and began to, spread the gospel of analytics to within yeah. the legal profession, was it a hard sell? Did other lawyers get it right away, or were they skeptical of what it was that you were trying to offer?
You know, I'll tell you, and I stand by this, that I believe that selling into legal in particular is one of the hardest verticals that there is. It really is. And there's a variety
I've heard that
of reasons. So I think on a basic level, people got it. Some of the you know, easy stuff, judge analytics, that's a value prop people understand. What the difficulty there are a few things. One, you have lawyers simply used to doing a certain thing. And what you're asking is a little bit of a behavior change, which is always going to be very, very difficult. So I'd say that lawyers understand and historically have understood that, yes, this data sounds valuable. Getting them to actually incorporate it into daily workflow, that's the bigger hurdle. And we're getting there. And it's funny, what we see in our users is we see someone trickle in a couple times and then they become a power user. Mm-hmm. But what you have to do is get those other users that haven't tried it yet to take the hurdle of just say, I'm going to explore. And for a busy lawyer, that actually is, you know, they have many things on their list, and when they're checking out new technology usually isn't one of them. So how do you actually bring it to them? It continues to be a hurdle. I think we're moving a lot faster than we ever did, and we're also moving forward outside of sort of private sector legal. So corporations, large businesses, municipalities, everyone that sort of has a legal team is a potential customer. But it's definitely, I will not sugarcoat it, for any legal tech company out there, you are going to be in the trenches for some number of years if this is your market.
Yeah. I mean, it's interesting that you say that the judge analytics part of it is easy for lawyers to understand, because I still talk to lawyers who don't understand it, because they still have this attitude that every case is different, and that you cannot, you know, and especially my case is different, and that you can't predict outcomes based on, you know, either past behavior or that sort of data.
Yep.
So, I mean, what do you say to lawyers who express that kind of skepticism?
So I've encountered that many times. I like to think of it as the art, not science thesis,
right,
where
exactly.
Law is an art, right? And you couldn't, it can't be science. You can't, you know, really deduce it down to basic binary information. And my response is that's actually why it requires a human. So what you need is the technology to surface all of the information. And then the human is the one understanding the nuances of the way that these play and still making the final decision. So would I say you take a human out of the loop entirely and have technology litigate your case? Absolutely not. I think we are probably never going to get there in terms of litigation. But do you need to have better information to be able to make those strategic, nuanced decisions? Yes. But no, you're absolutely right. I encounter that very often. And I also like to think of it as a way that lawyers like to sort of identify their own value in. I'm necessary because I know all of these nuances. And I really don't doubt that. I do think that you can only have better tools to be a better carpenter, et cetera.
Yeah. So where is Trellis at today? What states or courts are you in? How many are you in? What's your traction in terms of customers?
We have been really growing massively. And I put that out, I really give a lot of credit to the folks that are researching and coming upon Trellis themselves, right? They're mm-hmm. looking up a judge, they're looking up opposing counsel, they come into their data and decide for themselves that they believe the tool might be valuable, right? It's a free trial. So all you're saying is, sure, I'll check it out and decide for myself. So that's been the way that we've been able to grow. And right now we're actually live 10 states. We are very, very close with a couple more. I'll tell you which ones those are. But 10 states, 365 counties that are currently live on the site. And really looking to grow, with the goal being that we have the entire nation by the end of next year or early 2023.
Hmm.
Now, that's not going to include, there will still be some outliers. We know there are some courts that are not online at all. It likely won't include those ones. What we're talking about are the ones that have some digital presence.
Right.
But we are really aggressively going after acquiring all of that data and then continuing to grow both in large firms where we have a presence, but also in the SMB market. You know, it turns out that 70% of lawyers are at a firm that is 10 attorneys or under.
Right.
And it's interesting because we think about these brand, you know, marquee brands and you think, oh, that's the market. And instead, there's this massive SMB market. That we're really looking forward to continuing to help and bring forward and have resources similar to the large firms that we support.
Yeah, and I would think lawyers who are in smaller firms, even boutique firms who do a lot of litigation, would be the ones who could most benefit from the kinds of analytics you offer, because it can give them that upper hand, that edge in a case.
Exactly, definitely. And, you know, I think on either side, you're always looking at different things. I like to think of it as the very large defense firms. So what do they care about? Their reputation. They want to win. They want to know that they're utilizing the best information to try and win. What about the rest of the market? I mean, obviously, they want to win too, but what do they really need to keep their practice growing? They need to move faster.
Yeah.
They need to acquire more clients. And how can we help them in that area as well, I think is an important part for sort of all of the industry to be able to move forward collectively.
Yeah. So did you say you could tell me some of the other states that you're planning on moving into,
absolutely.
Or is that still a secret?
No, absolutely not. Couldn't be more excited to share. So we are about to release Connecticut, Ohio. We have some big ones coming. Georgia. New Jersey. That's a huge one we've been working on for a while. Those four are close in the works right now. And then we've got Michigan shortly after that and some others. But we are currently, just to sort of rattle off a list, in California, New York, Florida, Texas, Nevada, Washington, Massachusetts, Pennsylvania, Illinois, and I'm forgetting one other state. I hope that state doesn't get upset, but there's one other one there.
And is that when you say you're in a state, are you saying you're statewide or you're in major metropolitan areas in those states, or does it vary from state to state?
Phenomenal question. So the way that we think about it is we want to make sure that we have a really meaningful aspect of a state before we go live in a market. So we don't, with Illinois being our one outlier, where in Illinois we currently only have Cook County. Mm-hmm. But for every other state that we have, we don't go live until we cover 90% of the population. So yes, that will be most of your major metropolitan areas. But what we do once we go live in a state, and this goes back to the sort of depth that I was talking about earlier, is we will go back and backfill the smaller counties. So when we say we're covering Washington and we release, let's say, 8 or 10 counties in Washington, we are then going back and continuing to acquire the other smaller counties in Washington as we move forward. So there is always this sort of depth and breadth going on at both times.
You're not the only litigation analytics platform out there in the legal market. There are others, obviously, Gavalytics, which also mm-hmm. started in California, Lex Machina, which also started in California. Actually, they started
we're friendly neighbors.
All friendly neighbors. How do you distinguish yourselves from other products on the market?
So one, I think that the fact that other folks are in this market and are starting to recognize it is only validation for the fact that this data is valuable and can really be a game changer in the trajectory of cases. So I honestly think as we expose attorneys to litigation analytics, to having access to this data, by any one of our companies, we're doing a service to the entire industry. In terms of the way we're a little bit different, so as I mentioned, I think, and it's hard because some of those, in fact, both of those other products are behind paywall, so I don't have a huge understanding of the way their products may have matured in the last years. Mm-hmm. But for Trellis, what I can say is we're really that holistic data company. So at our core, Are we a legal tech company? Yes. But at our core, what are we really? We're a legal data company. And that doesn't mean that as we move on, we are only a tool for lawyers. It means that we have data that we can help other industries to make better decisions as well. Insurance being a big one, financial services, there's a whole variety. So I like to think of us really as a data company, with the data being the lifeblood of everything that we build on top of our data. With having the searchable sort of, you know, Google for the state trial courts as our specialty. Judge analytics is great. And even as we continue, we have company analytics coming and a whole variety. We just released verdict analytics, in fact. But these analytics lay on top. They lay on top as sort of a layer in the pyramid, with the data at the core being really what we focus on and what we have a lot of pride in. And so that would be one of the big differences, is I think at our core, we're a data company, and we're really sort of revolutionizing in legal right now, but we're starting to help other industries make better decisions as well.
And when you say you're kind of a Google for trial courts, what do you mean by that?
So I mean, in the way you might think about, so Pacer is an example, right? You should at least be able to, not particularly innovative, but you should be able to pull up documents by search by, let's call it parties, or search by a case number, and not simply search the one district that you're in, but be searching across the nation. So with Trellis, that's what we do. If you were an individual attorney and you were trying to find information right now, and you were to go onto a county court's website, you, after all of the hurdles of proving you're a human, et cetera, you would have to have that case number in order to find information. And then you're finding information only about that case. So what we do is we take away all of those limitations, whether it be by location, by case type, by judge, by opposing counsel. If I want to see everywhere Bank of America is getting sued across the nation on a particular fraud case, I can do that. There's no limitations in terms of having to stay location specific. If I want to search a judge, if I want to search my opposing counsel and see how many times they've appeared before my judge. So I think of it as the sort of Google, as the ability to strategically search across the state trial courts by whatever classification keyword is going to be valuable to you. And then most importantly, the ability to mix and match those terms, so that I can always continue to add another layer, another classification that will narrow me down into something more specific, but I can start nationwide. And that's really the way we should be thinking about looking at this trend information and analysis across the nation, is how do we think about the way that all of these cases are moving across all of the states? And then how can we look at places where certain cases are moving faster, dockets are moving faster, et cetera, to think about how we can also help sort of the rest of the nation and the rest of the court system fight with what they deal with, which are resources issues in general. But at our core, we should be able to search the U.S. state trial court system from one searchable interface. And that feels like a matter of right to me, as our basic core is, you know, citizens to be able to do so.
So I can do that today. I can go into Trellis and I can search universally across the courts that you cover?
Correct. Absolutely.
Does that cost me? I mean, how do you pay? Do users pay by the state or how does that work?
They do. So right now, we have a basic free trial model, as I mentioned. We really think it's important that our users determine for themselves that this data is valuable. But a way you would go on is you could hop onto the site. It's trellis.law/search, and you will start searching. There is no paywall there. You can get in and start going. So if you wanted to search, you know, Trump, or there's all kinds of funny things to there's a lot of interesting stuff in there if you just wanted to spend the day searching around. But then what happens is, after a certain number of searches, we'll say, hey, register for an account if you'd like to keep searching. That gives us email address, et cetera. You create an account. And then from there, you'd start a free trial. And the free trial ultimately rolls into a monthly subscription cost, where there's varying levels of usage. We find that most individuals are right around the $100 a month for access, and they're generally one state specific. But for, let's say, our very large, you know, white shoe law firms, those are going to be both a combination of either usage, or they want unlimited, which happens many times, and then how many states they want access to. And that's the way that we price.
Yeah. in that the search and the judge analytics are kind of two different products within your platform.
It's true.
Right? Is that fair to say, right? So what did the judge analytics look like today? What kinds of analytics do you provide on judges?
Oh, we've come a long way. I wonder if you remember what they were before.
Well, I didn't look back at what I wrote at the time, so that's extent of my memory.
Okay. So one of the things that we did before was we stayed granular on motion, motion grant rates, and we really dug in there. Yeah. What we've done now is go much more holistically across the judge. So we now call it a judge dashboard rather than an analytics report. And you'll, of course, get all your biography and basic information about the judge. But then how many cases do they have? How many active cases? What's the breakdown of their court calendar right now? What are the types of cases that they're hearing that they're most familiar with? Of course, you still have the specific motion analytics. But now we have two layers that you can drill down deeper, which are motion analytics specific to a particular practice area. So not just an MSJ and how the judge rules, but how does that judge rule in an MSJ, in commercial litigation? And then one other layer is by moving party. Does the judge's analysis on this particular motion change if plaintiff brings the motion or if defense brings it? There's verdict analytics for bench trials for judges. And then we also do timing and outcome analytics. So outcome by and timing, both by practice area and matter type for the judge to continue to really drill down on all of those varying aspects. So it's become a much more holistic understanding of the judge. And then for every metric that we do for a judge, we always give the context of what that looks like for other judges in the county, what's the county average for judges, and what's the state average for judges on that particular metric, so that you can always see where the judge is an outlier, as that's still an incredibly important piece of information.
Yeah. I read in some of the coverage of this latest funding round that you also plan to build out your API.
Yes.
Is that for the purpose of being able to make that data available to other industries or other verticals? Is that the idea behind that? Or what is the API to be used for?
So the answer is yes, Abe. It's to both. So, So what I mean is we have, there's a lot of large law firms right now that are actually trying to be innovative, that are trying to move internal projects forward and to utilize data. And I commend them for it. It's awesome to see. So if you look at some of our existing customers, they actually want to digest our data in two ways. They love having the end user platform that the attorneys and associates can really dig in on. But maybe they want to do a particular ML model, a machine learning model for this particular case type and in this area. And they want to see what that looks like for their practice or give that information to a specific client. So they'd actually like to digest it in both ways, both the end product and very specific pieces of data that they're interested in for whatever they're exploring at that moment. So the API is moving for two things. One is to fulfill existing client demands for anyone that doesn't want to digest the data as an end product, but instead potentially wants to map it into their own platforms to have a, internal, universal platform for their firm. Or again, now take this over to other industries so that serve other industries where they want one very specific piece of our data, say HR platforms, for example, want to look up prospective employees and see if they've sued their former employers. That's one very specific piece of our data. Or if you take property management, state court has all of your eviction data. So if you want to run an eviction check on someone, that's one very specific aspect of our data that you can just do a query and get that and then power it back through the platform that their users are used to, keep all of that information centralized and still be able to get that one piece of data from us very quickly.
So I know earlier you said you hope to be in every state by the end of next year. I'm going to make a little note of my calendar to check back with you at the end of next year and see how that's going. What else? What else is ahead? What else do you want to see happen with this company over the coming years? What's the future look like for Trellis?
So the future is bright. I mean, really, we need to continue to move forward on key things. One is listening to our current customers and what are the things that they want the most. And really listening. I think as you continue to mature as a company, that's the most important thing you can do is not think you know what the market wants, but let them tell you and then test it. And so it's going to be continuing with data acquisition, as you just mentioned. How quickly can we acquire the rest of the nation? And then how do we listen to our current customers to build what new features, what new analytics are really going to help them? And an example of that is we actually very recently released what we call verdict analytics. Mm-hmm. And this is what we have done is we've acquired the verdict data for all the counties that we cover going back to 2009. And you, from a high level, can search by injury type or cause of action or judge or expert, and then come up with the analytics at the top of any search. You'll have the analytics for the average, the range, highest and lowest verdict, and then the median. We like to give the median because honestly, the averages get way thrown off by very high verdicts or very low verdicts on the other side. Yeah. But the verdicts, what we were hearing from our users is that's great to be able to search across verdicts in its own universe. But what would be really helpful is if we could connect those verdicts back to the underlying cases, to the docket, to the documents, so that when they're understanding a verdict, they have the context of understanding what happened in that case? What was the fact pattern? Why might it be an outlier or why not? And so that's what we've done recently in our verdict analytics is the combination of the analytics by many different filters, but also mapping it again to the underlying data that's powering that analytics. And so going forward, it's continues to be products like this, you know, features like this. How do we listen and build and then test and do it again. And I don't see the product ever being done. I can't imagine a world where there isn't a way to make it better, a way to build more always.
Yeah. We'll tie some of that verdict information into expert witness information, and then you've got another gold mine going.
Exactly.
I can relate to that because many years ago, I helped launch a site called verdictsearch.com, which is part of ALMlaw.com. But when we were launching it, there was still a lot of that stuff you had to gather the information manually, go court to court and find pieces of paper and accumulate them and enter the data.
Not much has changed since then. I wish I could say.
Is that right? Yeah. Well, hey, Nicole, it's been a real pleasure to speak with you. I'm really happy we had the chance to catch up, and congratulations on all your success and everything you're doing. And thanks for talking.
Thanks so much, Bob. It was so great to be here. Really appreciate it.
All right. Stay well. My guest today was Nicole Clark, founder and CEO of Trellis. Thanks to Nicole for joining me today. What are your thoughts on today's show? Share them by tweeting us at LawNext Podcast. LawNext is produced, engineered, and edited by Populous Radio. I'm your host, Bob Ambrogi. I hope you'll join us again next time for another episode of LawNext.